Hello and welcome back to another episode of More Than Money. I'm your host, Ross Murray, and on today's episode, I'm doing another series of Ask Me Anything. So I previously did this in episode 25, where I answered your money questions, and I thought it was about time to jump on here and answer some more money questions that I've received on a weekly, daily, or monthly basis from clients, friends, family, or people I meet on the street. So in today's episode, I'm going to be answering a handful of questions that I've received recently. Hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to More Than Money with your host, Ross Murray. This episode of More Than Money is brought to you by More Time Financial, a financial planning company who are on a mission to help young Australians make smarter decisions with money by providing real-life financial advice, coaching, and financial education.
Hey, what's up? It's Ross Murray. Welcome back to another episode of More Than Money. On this podcast, I have real conversations about lifestyle, money, and business. Sometimes I share interviews with business owners and entrepreneurs about starting their own business and their journey. Other times we do financial education and informational episodes to help you make smarter decisions with money, just like this one. So if you're new here, consider subscribing. Now, before we get started on today's episode, this is just a friendly reminder in order to keep our lawyers happy that in preparing this podcast, myself and any contributors have not taken into account any particular person's objectives, financial situation, or needs. So before acting on any of this information, you should consider its relevance to your personal circumstances. And if required, seek the assistance of a licensed professional. Okay, so question number one coming in today from Steve online said, "Hey guys, looking to get some advice around investment properties. I'm aware that having a property and using it for Airbnb could potentially be riskier when it comes to consistent cash flow, but I also think that there is possibility of more income to be made. I'm 21 and my partner is 22. We have $38,000 in savings, $10,000 in investments. We've just about to finish our build of our first home and looking to get an investment property in mid next year. I'm trying to weigh up the option of, do I rent this out long term as a normal rental or do I use Airbnb? Which do you think is better?" Thanks, Steve, for that question. So a couple of things to answer, and obviously it's pretty fitting to get a question like that given the recent Airbnb episode that we did with Craig Hill in episode 39. So if you haven't listened to that one, be sure to jump back and have a listen to that. Definitely send that link through to Steve. Obviously, first of all, given Steve's age and current financial position, assuming you don't have any other shit debt or consumer debt, obviously well done on your age. That's fantastic. Probably a lot of hard work that's gone into getting you where you are today. Question regarding, should you use an investment property as a long-term rental or should you use it for Airbnb purposes? So a couple of things that I would note from what I've seen previously is first of all, I would, if we're looking at it from a rental perspective, so obviously it's not going to be an easy answer. It's all going to come down to the numbers, obviously what's involved, where you're looking at purchasing. So the couple of things that I would look at from my side of things, if I was trying to weigh up this option for a client, would be, first of all, we want to look at the long-term rental option. So we obviously want to do both. Let's start with the long-term rental option. So the first thing I'd do would be to chat to a real estate agent or a property manager. If you have, or if you already have a property in mind or a location in mind, this is going to make it a bit easier. So I'll chat to them and see what the average rental income would be for a property that you're looking at. So if you're looking at a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom property in Biggera Waters, for instance, let's just use that place on the Gold Coast, you'd want to understand what is the long-term rental potential of a property like that. So what are other properties going for in the area? And then that's obviously going to give us a good indication of what the rental income will be. So that we've got one step of that equation, which is obviously the income. Then we want to look at factoring all the different ongoing costs that come with having a long-term rental. So you need to decide, are you going to rent it out yourself or are you going to have a property manager look after it for you? What type of maintenance is required on the property? Is it a high maintenance property? Is it a low maintenance property? Are there any other associated costs with body corporate fees and things like that? What are the rates? What are the water bills? All the things that come into it when owning a property. So you want to factor all those in, and that's going to give us our income, and that's also going to give us our expenses, obviously making sure we allow for any contingencies and making sure we have a buffer at all times. So then we want to do the same thing for an Airbnb holiday rental property. So obviously we'll use Airbnb because that's probably the most popular, but there are also other options of looking at stays and putting it on bookings.com and things like that as well. Assuming Airbnb / holiday rental. Now on the surface level, we have the potential of charging a higher price per night than you would if you broke down a weekly rental into price per night. So generally speaking, most holiday rentals or short-term rentals can fetch a higher price per night. However, the other thing that we need to factor in is the vacancy rate. Now, vacancy rate is how many nights is your property vacant. Now, if we compare that to a long-term rental property, generally speaking, if we have a good tenant, most of the time we're signing for a minimum of 6 months, probably more likely around a 12-month lease, which happens in most cases. Now, obviously, every suburb is different, but generally speaking, you're looking at either a 6-month or a 12-month lease. So by having a 6 or 12-month lease in place, you know that you're pretty much guaranteed to have people staying in your property every single night for that 6 or 12 months, depending on the contract. Now, if we compare that to a holiday rental or an Airbnb holiday rental, now that vacancy rate is going to obviously potentially increase because you're going to have a lot more turnover. People aren't going to be staying for long periods of time. You might be lucky you get someone in there for a week, maybe 2 weeks during a holiday, school holiday period. But generally speaking, people are staying for a handful of nights at a time. So that means there's a lot more changeover. There's a lot more people coming in and out. So it has the potential to have a higher vacancy rate. Now, obviously, if you're in a really great area, that vacancy rate could decrease. But generally speaking, it's going to be higher than if you just compared it to a long-term rental. So what I would be doing to compare each of these two options would be to obviously research the competition in the area and see what people are getting. Now, obviously, every single property is going to be unique, but you could take a guess by looking at the competition to say, okay, what does a house, again, using Bigger Waters for some reason, what does that house, 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, get on a nightly basis on something like Airbnb or stays? So again, we need to try and get those two parts of the equation. We need to get what could our income be, and then you want to try and get a reasonable, or be probably underestimate the how many nights you could rent that out. So you want to try and factor in a decent vacancy rate because you want to try and urge on the side of caution. So then we want to try and work out the income per year. Obviously, that's going to give us that nightly rate times the amount of nights that the property is rented. The next thing we need to do in that equation is we need to work out the expenses. So we want to try and go through, again, factor in all the same expenses that you would in a long-term rental. You're going to have rates, you're going to have potentially body corporate, you're going to have maintenance and expenses like that. But the other thing that's going to come with having a short-term rental is obviously a higher expense, because you're going to have regular cleans, you're going to have changeover of sheets, you're going to have potential extra wear and tear on the furniture. And then you also need to think about who's going to manage the property on an ongoing basis. So again, if we compare that to a long-term rental, you've got the tenants in there. It's probably a little bit of work up front to get them in, get the contract signed and get them going. But once they're in there, they're going to be in there for that 6 or 12 month period like we talked about. However, with a short-term rental, you're going to have, again, a lot more turnover. So that's a lot more management. So you need to try and work out, is this something that you're going to do yourself, or are you going to hire someone to do it for you? So then obviously if you're paying someone to do that for you, you're paying them to manage the property, you're paying someone to clean the property, that means the expenses are going to go up as well. So if it's something you're going to do yourself, then obviously you need to factor in how much is your time worth and what you want to put on that. So again, quite simply, we want to take the income, we want to take the expenses, and then that's going to give us, purely on a numbers perspective, what is the better option based on all of those factors. So before you make any decision regarding property, obviously it's a big decision to make, you want to be sure that you have all of the information available. So you want to factor in all the potential expenses, all the potential income, so then we can weigh it up to say, okay, well, based on all this information, based on the time I have available to allocate towards this thing, this investment, this business, this is what the better option would be. Now, obviously that is a very simplistic way of looking at it. There's probably going to be some things that we can't predict, that such as like a unique property that's just kind of blows it out of the water, that you're trying to make so much money on it that it kind of covers all the expenses and it makes it really worthwhile. But generally speaking, that's the most simplistic way of looking at the two options. So just purely from a numbers perspective, which if we're talking about an investment property, then it is a business. So we need to consider the numbers. So the way that we kind of look at it is a long-term rental is a passive way to rent your property. So passive, you might've heard the term passive income. That is obviously not having to do much work, as I said, upfront. It's obviously a bit of work to get the person in there on an ongoing basis, probably a little bit of management involved to deal with the tenant, make sure they're taking care of the property. But generally speaking, it's relatively passive. Whereas an Airbnb or short-term holiday rental is a much more active way of earning money. You can potentially earn a lot more, and I use that word lightly, potentially, but it also requires a lot more work. So it's a lot more active way of making money and has the potential to make you more money in the long run. So that would be my way of comparing the two options of should you use your investment property as a long-term rental, or should you be looking at using Airbnb or short-term holiday rental? Steve, thanks for the question. I hope that helps. All right, so next question today comes from Mark online. So Mark says, hey, I'm really struggling with a skill that I thought I would have by now, which is saving money. I sold my car and got $8,500 a month ago, and I've gone through almost half of it. I honestly don't know how I could have spent this much, but I somehow have. Really need some help getting new strategies for saving money. I currently live with my parents. I'm a first year apprentice and on apprentice wages, trying to save another $15,000 for a car. Any information or thoughts would be greatly appreciated. So Mark, thanks for sending through this question. So a couple of things that I would ask initially, and obviously without knowing too much about what else you've got going on. So first of all, you said you don't know how you could have spent half of the $8,500. So $4,250 is gone somewhere. So obviously that's a bit concerning, which you obviously outlined in your question, but you can find out exactly where this has gone very simply. You can look back over your bank transactions over the last month or two, however long you said it's been. So I would look back over your bank transactions for the last month, and you can figure out very, very quickly where that money's gone and the date of when you spent it. So that I don't think is a reasonable thing to say, is I don't know where that money's gone, because quite simply, go back over your bank transactions, review your expenses that you've spent over that period of time and figure out exactly where it's gone. Now, obviously, if it's been withdrawn in cash, it's a little bit harder to know exactly where it's spent or what you spent it on, but you could probably put two and two together depending on the date of when you withdrew the money. So generally speaking, most of us spend the most amount of money on Friday, Saturday, and Sundays on the weekends. I would, yeah, go back, and that's step number one. Figure out where the money went so that we can get rid of that answer pretty, pretty quickly. So the next thing we need to do is we need to figure out, do we have an income problem or do we have an expenses problem? Because saving money is very simple, but it's not very easy. So the simple way of figuring out how you can save more money is we need to know two sides of the equation. We need to know how much are you earning. So you mentioned that you're on apprentice wages, which doesn't matter. It's still whatever that income is, we need to total that. And then the next thing we need to do is need to total your expenses. So what I would do would be list out all the possible expenses that you currently spend money on. So starting from the normal things that you might spend on a weekly basis, so groceries, entertainment, fuel. Then I'd look at things that you spend on maybe a fortnightly or monthly basis. So look at your rent, look at your phone bill, look at your internet. You said you're living with your parents, so whether you're paying them rent or not, I'm not sure, but you want to list out all your possible expenses. Hopefully in your current position, you don't have many, but you want to list all them out so we know exactly what your expenses are. So then obviously if your expenses are more than your income, then we have an expenses problem. If you cannot move your income, then the only other option is to reduce your expenses. Now that, again, very, very simplistic way of looking at this, but that's the simple answer. It's not very easy, but it's very simple. So what I would do is you need to figure out, can you increase your income? So if you're on first year apprentice wages, maybe not. Assume you might not be able to ask for a pay rise at this stage. Could you take on other work outside of what you're doing during the day? Can you do things like obviously Uber and get another job and all that kind of thing? So that might not be possible, but that's the way to solve the income problem, is to obviously increase your income. Now, if you tell me that that's not possible, then the only other option you have is to reduce your expenses. So before you can reduce your expenses, you need to know what your expenses are. So that's part of that first exercise. By listing out all your expenses, then that tells me, or that will tell you, what you can potentially cut back on. Now, there's probably only a handful of categories that you can really cut back on. For most people, it's food and entertainment. Those are probably the two easiest ones. Not saying that it's very fun or very enjoyable reducing your expenses, but that's the way to increase your savings. Now, that's the way I would approach your savings problem. So the other thing I would add to there, which I've mentioned on a number of episodes, is it's very hard to save money unless you have something to save for. So you need to be very clear on why do you want to start saving money. So is it something you need to buy a new car? Is it something you want to go on holiday? Are you saving for a house deposit? Do you just want to have enough money so you can start investing? What is the main reason that you want to start saving for? Because if you don't have a clear reason, it's not going to be easy, or you're not going to be able to save any money at all, regardless of your income and your expenses, because if you don't have something to save for, you're going to find ways to spend that money. So just a quick recap on there, I would obviously get super clear on your income. So actually, first of all, go back and review your transactions over the last month to figure out, first of all, where that $4,250 went. Next, I would make sure we're clear on your income, exactly what you're earning on a week-to-week basis. And then thirdly, I would list out all of your expenses. So we're super clear on terms of what your expenses are. Then you can figure out, can you increase your income or do you need to reduce your expenses? If you can do both, that would be fantastic, but we're just going to make sure that we're saving the difference. And then lastly, and most importantly, we want to get super clear on why do you want to be better with your money? Why do you want to start saving? What are you saving for? So that would be my suggestions. Thanks again for the question, mate. All right, the next question says, hey, I'm curious about how do you suggest people split money with their other half, i.e. partner, wife, spouse? Currently, we both have stable jobs, and when we're out and about, we simply split payments at the moment, i.e. I pay for one dinner, and then my partner, she pays for the next. I pay for dinner, she pays for dessert, etc. Planning on buying a house or apartment with her in the future, so things are pretty serious, and just looking for some information on how we go about this, as well as combining savings, etc. Cheers in advance. All right, so a couple of things that I would suggest on how to approach this is, obviously, you've mentioned that you are looking at purchasing a house together, so I'm assuming that things are relatively serious, which is great. This would probably differ if you're just starting out a relationship, or you're just kind of obviously just met the person, or maybe just moved in together for the first time. That might complicate things a little bit, but what I would suggest is, obviously, you need to figure out how comfortable you are with each other and whether you want to combine everything or do you want to keep things relatively separate. Now, what I would suggest from my personal perspective is how me and my partner do it. So we both earn different amounts. However, we have worked out what our joint bills are, and we transfer the same amount each week into our joint accounts. Into our joint spending account. Out of that account, in our case, we rent. So we have rent comes out of there. We have groceries, and then we also have shared bills. So obviously shared house bills and things like that. The other thing we do is add in there additional money for fun money or entertainment. So things that we do when we're spending money together as a couple. So each of us, even though we earn different amounts and we get paid in different frequencies. So she gets paid monthly, I get paid fortnightly. So it gets a little bit confusing if we're combining everything. But what we've worked out is what our joint expenses are. And then we transfer that amount into our joint account on a weekly basis, and then that way we share those expenses from that account. So we have a joint account, we each have a card for that account, and then all of our joint expenses come out of there. So we both transfer a certain amount in there each week, and then we have our scheduled transfers come out of there, and then we've got money left over there for to buy groceries for the week, and then what's left is money for joint entertainment and things that we go out for dinners and things like that. So that way it makes things really simple, that we're not necessarily having to worry about who paid for what, transferring money back and forth to each other and complicating things. We just worked out how much money are we happy to allocate to their joint fund on a weekly basis. And then obviously we make sure that we each transfer money in there. And then that way it keeps things nice and simple. So that works for us. Maybe a little bit different, not showing your circumstances, but don't have kids at this stage. So we can keep things relatively simple. Obviously when kids come on board and things like that, there's probably more expenses that we need to worry about. So same thing you added there regarding for savings, combining savings. We do a similar thing. We've got shared goals that we're aiming for. So saving for a house deposit, new cars and things like that we're aiming for together. So then we've opened up a savings account. Again, each transfer the same amount into that savings account. So that way it's joint money. The way that we have it structured works really well, because there's no fighting between who's spending money on what, because we've got our joint bills covered, we've got our joint entertainment covered, and we've got our joint savings goals covered. And then whatever is left, whatever else we want to do with that money is obviously up to us. It keeps things equal, but it also reduces the fighting because she can spend the money, her money on what she wants. I can spend the money on what I want because we've got those joint bills covered. So that would be my suggestion on how to tackle that question. So hopefully that's helped. And thanks again for writing in. So last question on today's episode comes in from James. He said, I've had an investment property for a couple of years and I haven't done a very good job at record keeping. I think he said record keeping for tax. Now I'm just about to lodge my tax return for the last 2 years. I haven't done it for 2 years and it's becoming a nightmare. Any tips and recommendations for how to solve this problem or how it can be better going forward? So James, thanks for the question. Yep, this is something that I see a lot with people who have investment properties. They neglect the record keeping or bookkeeping involved. And then when they go to do their tax makes things a lot more difficult. So what I would suggest, obviously can't go back in the past, but what I'd suggest going forward is that you try and keep a record of absolutely everything to do with that investment property. It's going to make tax time a lot better. So obviously we're at the end of July at the moment. So tax time is obviously happening right now for a lot of people. And what we've found, especially when people haven't done their tax for a couple of years, is that they have to try and go back and remember what their income was and what their expenses were for the property in that financial year. So what I would suggest going forward is getting, even if you want to start with a spreadsheet, it's probably the simplest way to do it, but you want to try and record absolutely every income that you receive, all the income you receive on that property, and then all the expenses that you incur on that property as well. So you want to try and maybe create a folder on your computer or create a folder in your emails to save all the receipts, making sure that if any money you spend on that property, so if you go to Bunnings to buy some stuff for the property, you take photos of the receipts, you record it in your spreadsheet, you write it down what the date was, what the amount was, and what exactly you purchased for the property, and obviously maybe some notes around why you purchased it. So when it comes to tax time in 6-12 months time, then it's going to make your life a lot easier. So if you've got a property manager looking after your investment property, the income side and some of the expenses that they might pay for or that might be done through the property manager will be included in their rental summary that they provide you at the end of the year. But all those other expenses that you have to pay for yourself, so the water, the rates, depending on which state you're in, the body corporate fees, all that kind of stuff that you have to pay yourself as the property owner, those are all become deductions in most cases against that property. So it's really important that you keep copies of those and you have records of all those receipts. That'd be my suggestion going forward. The more that you can treat this investment property like a business, the better. So if you're running a business, you would have to record all the income, have to record all the expenses, and have to make sure that you're keeping the books up to date in regards to a business. So having an investment property shouldn't be any different. You want to treat it like a business, and that way it's going to make your life a lot easier. So James, thanks for the question. I hope that is helpful. So thanks for tuning in to another episode of More Than Money. Just answering a couple of questions on today's episode that I've received recently. Hope that was helpful. If answering questions or answering these types of questions is something that you have enjoyed and would get value out of, please let me know and I'll plan to do a couple more episodes in the future. If you have a question to ask that you would like me answered on the show, follow the links in the description and show notes below and you can submit your question and I'll do my best to answer it in a future episode. Hope you have a great week.
If you've enjoyed this episode of More Than Money, make sure that you subscribe to keep up to date with all of the latest episodes. And feel free to like, comment, and share with a friend.